Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Good morning. I'm Anna Sale in for Brian Lehrer. Today we kick off a Brian Lehrer Show annual tradition, talking with all the filmmakers who have been Oscar nominated in the feature documentary category. There are five films. We'll do one a day. And today's is set in Brooklyn. Cutie and the Boxer features Dumbo-based artists Noriko and Ushio Shinohara. Director Zachary Heinzerling will be my guest. That's at the end of the show. Before we get there, we're going to talk about the long history of Asia-phobia and Orientalism that permeates pop culture in the U.S. and throughout the West. Plus, we'll hear about the lobbying efforts for a $10.10 minimum wage, lobbying for and lobbying against. And Tom Moran, editorial page editor at the Star-Ledger, will be on to talk about taking back his paper's endorsement of Governor Chris Christie. But first, let's look at the priorities Mayor Bill de Blasio laid out in his first State of the City address. As he said before, he said yesterday he wants an end to the tale of two cities.
New York will only work when it works as one city. And here's why. Despair does not dissipate. Those who are discouraged, even hopeless, about their future cannot contribute their labor or energy or values to their neighborhoods or to the neighborhoods that sit just a short subway ride away.
Income inequality is corrosive for all of us in New York City, Mayor de Blasio said. And now is the moment for all of us to come together to address it. In the city, that is. Washington and Albany, he's not sure how helpful they're going to be.
We cannot wait for Washington to act. We will not let the gridlock there, or even the limits of Albany, serve as an excuse for New York City to roll over and ignore our mission.
The speech focused on the governing philosophy behind that mission, but the policy specifics on how he'll get some of it done, we're still waiting on some of that. Here to join me for some analysis is Sally Goldenberg, the City Hall reporter for Capital New York and WNYC's Bridget Bergen. Hi, Bridget.
Good morning.
And welcome back to WNYC, Sally. You there, Sally? We'll bring Sally in when she gets on the line.
I'm here.
Oh, hi, Sally. Welcome to
hi.
WNYC. So, Bridget, first let's talk about the scene of the speech. I was thinking back a year ago where Mayor Bloomberg delivered his last State of the City at Barclays Center. There were banners hanging from the rafters just celebrating all the different city statistics. What was the scene like yesterday?
You know, you and I were there at Mayor Bloomberg's speech together, and it was very much an event. You got this sense that, you know, he was really putting his stamp on his legacy. These were all the things that he accomplished, and it was, you know, a really slickly produced event. You contrast that with the speech Mayor de Blasio gave yesterday. LaGuardia Community College, all that was behind him were flags of the city and then, of course, this huge banner, One City Rising Together. There were no big performances. You know, we heard the national anthem from some high school students. We said the pledge. But there was not a lot of pageantry. It was very much about sort of getting to the business of laying out this agenda and, you know, hitting on themes that we've heard him talk about throughout his entire campaign. Economic inequality, universal pre-K, and some of the proposals that he wanted to build on for his progressive agenda.
Mayor de Blasio spent a lot of time, as you say, making that argument for addressing income inequality and making the case that there's broad consensus to do so, including among wealthy New Yorkers, that this isn't class warfare. This is not about punishing success, as he said in his inauguration address. He said this is about making room for more success. Let's listen to about a one-minute section from the speech yesterday on that.
Many wealthy New Yorkers are committed to healing those divisions, not only out of mere altruism, not due to feelings of guilt or pity. They know that a gilded city isn't the New York they signed up for, even if they currently find themselves doing quite well. They want all New Yorkers to succeed because it enriches all of our lives, including their own, with vibrant neighborhoods and quality schools and fairly treated workers building a better and stronger city. And make no mistake, about the motives of those in our most hard-pressed communities. They don't typically look to the rich with anger. They aren't consumed with jealousy or spite. They are simply in search of the city that they signed up for, one that rewards not just wealth, but work.
That's Mayor Bill de Blasio laying out his argument for wealthy New Yorkers and for struggling New Yorkers having a stake in his agenda. Sally, who else in the speech got called out for recognition?
Well, at the beginning of the speech, he gave a list of acknowledgments. He noted David Dinkins, the former mayor who hired him in his administration. He thanked Andrew Cuomo for his partnership, although Cuomo was not, you know, at the speech. And he mentioned a few other citywide officials who were in the audience.
And public sector workers got a big section in the speech, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, he even said something, I don't have the exact quote, but it was something like, you know, we're not going to blame city workers for budget problems. And I think it was sort of a thinly veiled knock at Mayor Bloomberg, former Mayor Bloomberg, who had, you know, a pretty hostile relationship toward the end with the public sector workers.
And Sally, let's get to some of the policy specifics that he laid out. He talked about the living wage ordinance in New York City and dropping the city's lawsuit around that. What will that do? How many workers will that affect in New York City?
He said, he said tens of thousands of workers. It's not really clear. The RWDSU, the union that pushes the living wage law,
workers.
They've said that 12,000 jobs would have been covered had Bloomberg not blocked the law from the time it passed in 2012 until now. They said something like over 12,000 jobs would have been covered. But it's hard to know because it depends on, you know, what developers actually build in the city. So it's kind of an unknown number.
And this covers employers who receive city subsidies. This was a 2012 law. What are the wage levels that the ordinance requires?
Well, in the law itself, it was $10 an hour or with benefits, or $11.50 without. It's risen with indexing. I don't know the exact number. I think it's $10.20 and $11.75, maybe. I don't know. It changes periodically with indexing, but the law passed was $10 and $11.50.
So he says he's dropping the legal challenge, the city's legal challenge to that, and also issuing an executive order. What will that executive order do?
You know, I'm not clear. The speech wasn't very specific on the mechanics of the executive order versus a piece of legislation in the city council. So, you know, and we asked, obviously, afterward when we were writing our stories, and I'm not entirely clear on the mechanics of it. I think, you know, I'm not sure, but I think what he wants to do, he's definitely going to drop the lawsuit, the Bloomberg lawsuit, and then I think the executive order would speed up an immediate expansion, which would include, like, they put out a white paper afterward, and they said that they would include manufacturing jobs, which were previously excluded, Hudson Yards, which was previously excluded. But then if they may have the city council pass another amended bill, I'm not sure.
So that fits in with his "we can't wait" thing that he repeated several times in the speech. But he had another proposal in his speech, Bridget, about minimum wage in New York City. What was that proposal?
He said he wants to go to Albany next week and ask for the ability to raise the minimum wage across the five boroughs. It's certainly, with the response he's gotten from Albany thus far on his tax hike proposal, that doesn't seem like a proposal that has a very bright future ahead of it. And certainly we know when it comes to the tax hike in the pre-K proposal that there was a lot of talk about that in Albany yesterday. Senate Majority Leader Dean Skelos coming out with a very strong statement saying, I'm not going to allow this to even have a vote. And some pushback between Jeff Klein, Senator Jeff Klein, saying, you know, if the budget doesn't include this tax hike, I'm not going to let the budget pass on time. So
he's the other leader in the Senate, the Democratic leader, the independent Democratic leader in the Senate. But before we get to that back and forth, which happened as de Blasio was getting off the stage in Queens, the minimum wage hike, I mean, New York State just voted to increase the minimum wage last year across the state. This is setting up lawmakers in Albany to be voting to increase wages in New York City and leaving out the rest of the state. I mean, was there any reaction among Albany watchers? Anybody have any optimism for this proposal this year?
Mayor de Blasio has been building a case, arguing for home rule on issues that he says allows New Yorkers to define their own destiny. And that's certainly, you know, this push for minimum wage fits very much within that. I don't think that it has much more of an optimistic future than the tax hike, but they're going to lobby for it. They're going to make a case for it. And, you know, certainly within the assembly, there may be more support for it.
So, Sally, Bridget was just laying out some of the back and forth among Albany lawmakers about that tax to fund pre-K, universal pre-K in New York City. Dean Skelos, the Republican leader of the Senate, said he would not allow a vote if it included a tax increase. Then Jeff Klein, the other leader of the Senate, who's an independent Democrat, said that he would delay a budget if it didn't include de Blasio's vision. How should we understand how leaders in Albany are lining up for and against de Blasio's tax increase proposal?
Well, I mean, Skelos has said all along that he doesn't support raising taxes. So I don't think it's particularly surprising that he's taken this stance. I mean, it's a harsh stance, but it's not. It's in keeping with what he has said all along, which is he doesn't want to raise taxes, he wants to lower taxes. And Jeff Klein is trying to distinguish himself from that message and also be a player in this, right? You know, he's got sort of an unusual leadership role in the Senate, and he's trying to exert his authority. And in the Assembly, Speaker Silver is in favor of it. But it all sort of doesn't matter because Cuomo's not in favor of it so far. And that's really all that matters, right? Because the buck stops with him. And what he has said is that he would fund some portion. Well, he said he would fund universal pre-K. De Blasio says it's not enough money. But Cuomo has said he would fund it with existing revenues and that the state doesn't need to hike income taxes for it. So I think that's kind of the bottom line or the, you know, the final stop.
Listening to the speech yesterday, did you hear any new arguments from Mayor de Blasio directed towards Albany, Governor Cuomo, and Albany lawmakers?
No, I think the speech was very, very similar to everything we've heard him say for the past year on the trail, during the transition, you know, inauguration. There were no surprises. There was nothing new. There was no brand new argument made for pre-K or for the tax hike. It was, you know, is exactly what we've been hearing for the past year.
Bridget, I have to say, though, even though Dean Skelos' position wasn't necessarily new yesterday, my inbox was flooded with condemnations from all corners of New York City politics. And were we seeing the de Blasio political operation at work yesterday on that?
Absolutely. You know that he has launched this UPK campaign.
We're calling it UPK because it's so ubiquitous now, universal pre-K.
And the people who are driving that are people who were very much connected to his campaign. When I was going through, you know, similarly, my flood of reaction in my inbox, Berlin Rosen, the communications firm that did a lot of the strategic communications during de Blasio's campaign, was also putting out the statements for several of the unions who are strong supporters of this UPK push, 32BJ, the communication workers. But that is such a sign that, you know, this initiative is something that the de Blasio administration plans to pursue, not unlike they pursued their path to City Hall. They want to be able to show Albany that they have such grassroots support that, you know, that is what's going to make it, you know, something that Albany can ignore.
And how effective is that political operation in Albany? That political operation won an election in New York City, but does it translate?
At this point, I think we are so far from being able to answer that question. I was talking to Comptroller Scott Stringer yesterday, who used to be an Albany lawmaker, and he joked that the budget negotiations go on up until the last minute, and April 1st is the budget deadline in Albany. So will we really know the outcome of this? Not for months, but we'll certainly see the back and forth and see the posturing between, you know, the people who are supporting it and the pushback from Albany up until the very last second.
And while we're talking about taxes and spending, let's talk about how Mayor de Blasio said he'd manage the city's budget with more than 150 municipal unions negotiating new contracts. Here's what Mayor de Blasio said about that.
We are facing an uncharted path. In the face of this situation, we will be honest with New Yorkers about their government. We will navigate towards a future that is progressive and fiscally responsible. And it will not be easy.
So, Sally, that's pretty much all the mayor said about those expired union contracts. Will we hear more about this when he gives his budget address, or will he say...
Oh, I think so. I mean, he can't give a budget address and not actually talk about it because it's, you know, it's one of the biggest fiscal issues facing the city. I think the question that I have is, and I don't know the answer, we'll find out tomorrow, but the question I have is whether he will change the number that Bloomberg put into his previous budget modification plan in November for contracts. Because if de Blasio increases that number now, he's basically saying to the unions, here's what I have to negotiate with. And it kind of weakens his position. There's, you know, there's sort of a known quantity there. So what he might do is just leave Bloomberg's previous number, and as he negotiates, then do another budget modification in the coming months. But, you know, I don't know. That's an important thing to look for.
And Mayor Bloomberg's budget's left out retro pay, any possibility of retro pay.
Yeah, what Bloomberg did right before he left office was, according to him, balance the budget. I mean, there are always a million opinions on whether a budget is actually balanced. But Bloomberg discovered some unexpected revenues, higher revenues from Wall Street and some other things, you know, taxi medallion sales and so forth, that came in higher than expected. And so he, quote-unquote, balanced the budget. And in so doing, he settled, he put in money for contracts, but not for retroactive pay, and basically said to de Blasio, without saying it, you know, your hands are tied, the budget's balanced, the budget has to be balanced by law, and if you want to give retroactive pay, you're going to have to cut one of these programs you love so much. That was sort of the kind of the subtle message behind Bloomberg's final budget address.
Bridget.
Now, there's a higher surplus. I think Bloomberg News has reported the surplus could be as high as $4 billion. Money is fungible, and there could be more money coming in. I'm sure the revenues are going to be higher than expected. They always are. And he can use that money to settle the contracts. But to answer your initial question, yeah, I think he is going to talk about it tomorrow. I think he has to.
And during the budget address. Bridget, were the municipal unions visible at the mayor's first State of the City address?
There were some folks there, but, you know, certainly they were more visible in my inbox in terms of reaction later in the day.
And what were they saying yesterday ahead of the budget address?
I think there was some enthusiasm for the living wage and minimum wage proposals. Certainly, you know, they were voicing their support for his universal pre-K plan. They are, you know, lending their muscle and their, you know, their members sort of the view of their members as voters to that support. But, you know, I think similar to what Sally said, I think there's still a lot of anticipation around what the mayor's budget proposal will tell us. You know, this speech was, there was a lot of moments where I think de Blasio was trying to show how different he was from the past administration and really, you know, demonstrating that he was starting his agenda with a real commitment to fulfilling his campaign pledges. But you walked away from this speech without knowing a whole lot of detail around how he was actually going to do it. And we're going to learn a lot more of that tomorrow based on how he moves the money around, how many changes he has to make to fulfill what he says are his priorities.
Did you want to add something, Sally?
No, I think that's, you know, I think what Bridget said is exactly right. Usually budgets are given before states of the city, and so in a budget, you kind of have the meat on the bone, so when you give a state of the city, it can be more specific. I mean, I think his speech yesterday lacked some real detail, and I looked over Bloomberg's first state of the city, and it was much more detailed, much more chock full of numbers and facts, but I guess in de Blasio's defense, he did, you know, do it before his budget, and that's sort of the inverse, you know, and so you don't have the numbers to back up your plan. So I think the budget address is going to be more significant in terms of outlining his priorities than with State of the City, you know, in terms of the specifics.
So this speech, again, was Mayor Bill de Blasio laying out details of what his political brand is, what he's most concerned about. What anything he left out that you were surprised that didn't get a mention?
Yeah, I actually was surprised there was no mention of homelessness. You know, his one of his top criticisms of the Bloomberg administration was their inability to cut down homelessness to the levels that they set forth, you know, the goals they set forth when Bloomberg, you know, earlier in his term. And when de Blasio appointed his deputy mayor, who would oversee homelessness, and his homeless commissioner, it was a lot of criticism of Bloomberg, and it seemed to be a real priority for him. The New York Times did, you know, that long series on Dasani, the child who lives in that horrible homeless shelter. And so I was expecting some mention of it, and there wasn't. That was one thing that I thought was surprising.
I totally agree with Sally. That was something that I was asking folks for some reaction to after the speech, because de Blasio had made that something that he talked so much about leading up to the inauguration, even at the inauguration, and the fact that I don't even think the word was anywhere in the speech.
No, it
and,
wasn't.
Yeah, and so I got a lot of pushback from public advocate Tish James and Scott Stringer around this idea that he did put out this plan, or he put out a proposal saying that he would have an affordable housing plan by May 1st, and presumably many of those families would be covered by that plan. But I was surprised that something wasn't more explicit talking about it in the speech, given how much emphasis he put on it in the beginning of the year.
I saw that May 1st date, and the first thing I thought was Mayor Bill de Blasio as a candidate ran on, I have a plan for bringing hundreds of thousands of affordable housing units to New York City. What more is this group going to study prior to May 1st?
That's a good question. I mean, he wants to increase affordable housing through mandatory inclusionary zoning. And basically that's saying to developers, you know, as opposed to an incentive to build affordable housing, it's a requirement. And there are studies on both sides of this issue, but there are studies that show that, you know, that depresses development and also increases home prices. Now, someone will say there are studies, you know, that show the opposite, and that's true. But I think there's a lot of concern, even in the affordable housing world, about mandatory inclusionary zoning, and, you know, or some skepticism about it. So it really is a complicated issue that the results of which are not clear. And I think it's smart to study it before putting it into place, because he has a pretty ambitious affordable housing goal there.
I think it also buys some time. He just appointed all of his housing commissioners actually on Saturday, his planning commissioner on Friday, and it gives this new team of folks some time to make sure that they, you know, bring together their minds, their brains, and put together a plan that they're all on the same page. So I think that might be part of it as well.
Yeah, that's true, too. I mean, he is only a month in, and, you know, yeah, I think that's also true.
He's had a lot to do in this month of January. The weather did not cooperate. Well, thanks so much for your thoughts, WNYC's Bridget Bergen and Capital New York's Sally Goldenberg. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
There's one more proposal we want to tease out from Mayor Bill de Blasio's State of the City. His proposal to create a municipal ID card that would be available to all New Yorkers, including undocumented residents who need identification. So to talk with us a little bit about how this might work is Juan Manuel Benitez. He's the host of Pura Politica from New York One Noticias. Hi, Juan Manuel.
Hi, Anna.
So let's first listen to Mayor Bill de Blasio mentioning this in his State of the City address.
To all of my fellow New Yorkers who are undocumented, I say, New York City is your home too, and we will not force any of our residents to live their lives in the shadows. La ciudad de Nueva York es el hogar de todos los que vivimos aquí. No dejaremos que ninguno de nuestros residentes viva en las sombras.
This was the one section of Mayor de Blasio's speech where he showed off his Spanish chops. But this proposal would have a much broader effect than affecting just Spanish-speaking New Yorkers. Who is interested in this municipal ID card in New York City?
Well, I'm so happy to hear Spanish speaking
with a better accent than mine.
I'm
must
also
admit.
Here on WNYC. I think mainly I don't think they're trying to fool anybody. This is basically something for people who don't have any documentation in the city. I think going along with the theme of de Blasio's speech yesterday. It was a loud cry for independence, a city that is set to set a progressive course. And Albany, Washington, whether you like it or not, we're going to act on our own if you don't agree with us. So let's start with that. And given the inaction in terms of immigration reform in D.C. and also the reluctance in Albany to help undocumented immigrants, I think de Blasio has set out this proposal, a proposal that is still like being drafted by the administration, and it basically will help a lot of residents of the city who don't have right now any documentation to open maybe a bank account, to access a library and getting a library card, or even to access or to get into a municipal building, and most importantly, to eliminate the fear that this population in the city has to the police whenever they encounter the police in the streets. So I think that's basically what this tool would work as.
And you mentioned the details are still being drafted, but how would the city... how would this work? How would someone go? What kind of identification would be necessary to get a New York City identification?
Well, we don't have the details yet. We know that, like I say, the administration is drafting the bill. There's a huge support in this progressive city council for something like this to happen. But I imagine that you have to prove that you have some sort of address in the city, that you've been living or you're working in the city, because I doubt the city of New York is going to give this photo ID to anybody that comes to a city office to asking for it.
And this is Mayor de Blasio following up on a campaign promise while he was running for mayor. Tell me a little bit about the political coalition that's been advocating for this in New York City. Who's been behind this?
Well, the whole city government right now. We've covered for years a lot of marches and a lot of press conferences with the city council speaker, Melissa Marc-Viverito, with the public advocate, Tish James, even with the mayor, Bill de Blasio, advocating for immigrant rights. And so it's nothing really surprising that something like this would happen. Also, this is not the first time we've been talking about this kind of photo ID. Council member Hiram Monserrate tried to introduce this kind of legislation. I believe it was in 2007, and it didn't pass. But now it looks like it could happen, just because it's a campaign pledge, and also because there's a real attempt by the main actors in city government today to really engage this population that is there and that is waiting to come out of the shadows with the help at least of the city, if not the government of Washington, D.C.
And when it comes to New York City immigrants' rights advocates, is this their primary priority for the de Blasio administration?
Well, there are so many other things
that
go with it. And also, I think topics around minimum wage or affordable housing, those affect crucially also the immigration community. But it is also interesting to note that this is nothing new in this city, because more than 10 years ago, Mexican consulates in this country started issuing identification cards for their Mexican nationals. So they could have some photo ID whenever they encounter the authorities in the city and in the country, and many consulates around the country issued those. And also, you have New Haven that has some sort of photo ID, cities like Los Angeles and San Francisco, I believe. So this is nothing new. New York wouldn't be the first city to issue this kind of identification. The key and the complicated part would be to attract enough people who don't really need another photo ID, so this new identification card doesn't become a sign that you're in this country country without an immigration status.
That was my last question for you. What has been the approach in other cities like San Francisco? You mentioned New Haven, Trenton. How have they attracted people who have a driver's license in their wallet to go out and get a city ID so it doesn't become an identification that identifies you as being an undocumented resident in the city?
Well, it's always really complicated. And not only with this photo ID thing, but also with anything that you're trying to attract that population to come out of the shadows. It happened also with the Deferred Action Program by President Obama. Many undocumented immigrants are not really, they don't really believe the government is not going to use their information in a way that might put them in danger. And that's going to be also the risk, how the city would be able to ensure immigrants, undocumented immigrants, that that data is not going to be shared with the federal authorities, knowing that this President Obama, as Senator Schumer said this past weekend, President Obama has been the president in history in this country that has deported the highest number of people in the 5-6 years he's been in office.
What's the timeline on this? From your sources, you say that there's a broad coalition of support on city council among city leaders. The regime has changed in New York City. But when are we going to get the details on this legislation? And when do you think these cards are going to start being issued?
The mayor's office is right now drafting the legislation. They expect to have it ready in the next few weeks to introduce it at the request of the mayor, to introduce it in city council. We have the chair of the Immigration Committee in city council, Carlos Menchaca, who is in favor of this. He's the first Mexican-American city council member in the city of New York. And we also have the speaker of the city council in favor of this proposal. So we can expect, as soon as it is introduced, for things to move really quickly. The goal of the administration is to have it ready by the end of this year.
By the end of 2014. Juan Manuel Benitez, host of Pura Politica from New York One Noticias. Thanks so much for coming in again.
Thank you so much, Anna.
I'm Anna Sale in for Brian Lehr. After the break, we'll talk to Tom Moran of the Star-Ledger about why that paper rescinded its endorsement of Governor Christie's reelection bid.